This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
Welcome back. This is the Jesse Kelly Show. I am Lydia Serrani, filling in for Jesse Kelly. I just went to get some coffee, and then I was talking to Mike Lopez over here. But we got a lot to talk about. So this one story that I saw on social media, and it just outraged me. You can see the video on my Instagram, at Lydia News, LIDIANEWS. You'll see it. It happened in Seattle. It happened about maybe 2 weeks ago, but just the video is now coming out. This 75-year-old woman, Jeanette Macon. So make it known, Jeanette needs to have her name be set out there. Jeanette Macon. Jeanette Macon, 75 years old, Seattle. She was outside the courthouse. And she's just in the middle of the day, afternoon, minding her own business, waiting to cross the street, when a maniac comes up from behind her and hits her with all his might with a stick, right? And at the edge, and then you see her grabbing her face and she falls to the ground. They cut the video before you actually see the impact. Turns out he put bolts and screws, nuts, like he fashioned this to take and eat. They went through her eye. She lost her eye. This poor woman lost her eye. Here's what makes it really bad. As soon as bystanders come by, the police come, there's body cam footage from the police. Police right away, they say, oh, was this Falepea? They knew right away who it was. It was this homeless guy who's crazy. They said, oh, no, he usually just punches people. He usually just assaults people. So the police knew he's been in and out of jail. The guy looks like a psychopath. Even worse, he identifies as trans, as Falepea. He looks Hispanic, 42 years old. There's a news report of it. Do we have that? Let's clip number 16.
Public defender Kevin Robinson was quick to bring up Falepea's long history of mental incompetence this morning.
I have worked with Ms. Pea briefly before, and I've reviewed the history of contact that she's had with both the mental health and the legal system. There's a long history of findings of incompetence, and the symptoms that have been noted before, I have observed personally today.
Although charging documents don't mention Pea's mental health, they show Pea's long history with the justice system. It reads, quote, the defendant has a prior conviction for assault in the second degree in 2011. Defendant also has misdemeanor convictions for assault in 2024, four times in 2023, and once in 2020. It also calls Friday's attack as violent, random, and wholly unjustified, one that left 75-year-old Jeanette Macon with broken face bones and a blind right eye.
A lottery, but it's not a positive lottery. It's an awful, horrible lottery.
In an exclusive interview with King 5, Macon's son described the confusion they've had to navigate since the attack.
How could this happen here? What is wrong? What is happening? Who is doing something wrong that this is happening?
Andrius Diriki says he can't believe Pea was out on the streets after all those attacks from the past.
This is not the first assault. Like, he has assaulted before. So why the hell will anyone that is assaulting random people is going to be left on the street? It's like, that doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense. And you know what this reporter also left out? He stabbed somebody. This Falepea stabbed somebody 8 times recently. So you hear those are multiple assaults. This is a violent psychopath out on the streets. And now this poor woman, this 75-year-old Jeanette Macon, lost her right eye. She's never done anything wrong in her life. How many more innocent people have to die? Who has to die? Who has to be savagely beaten, abused for these left-wing politicians to stop this psychoticness? Because I don't know. I don't even understand what the reasoning behind it is. If you see somebody is mentally ill, they're hearing voices or they're violent, you have to lock them up like animals because they're acting like animals. That's what you have to do. Why are we a reactive society? Why are we not proactive? I remember walking down the street once with my sister in New York City, And we saw this like homeless guy, and he was spitting at people, flailing his arms around, and he was just acting like he didn't physically touch anybody yet. And so we walked one block, and my sister goes, she walks up to a cop and she says, oh, you got to go see on 55th Street. You got to go see over there, officer, just down the block right there. There's somebody who's mentally ill. He's not all there. He's only got one shoe on. He's freezing. He's acting. He must be on something, and he's going to hurt somebody. Cop looked at my sister. He looked at us and he just shrugged his shoulders. He didn't care. Literally did not care. Did not care. They were like, sorry, ma'am, nothing we can do about it. Nothing you can do about it. Like, I understand there's such a thing as civil liberties, but at what point as a society do we do the right thing? Where's some accountability? Where is your humanity? This poor woman, again, imagine if that was you. Forget about if that was you. Imagine if that was my mother. Now, I know I'm a crazy Albanian. I'm from the Bronx. But if that was my mother that this Fale Peya did it to, God help him. God help him, and he should be happy that he's behind bars right now on $1 million bond. But why did he stab somebody 8 times before? He should have never been out. We hear this stuff how many times? We hear it over and over and over again. We saw what happened to Irina Zarutska. That's the young Ukrainian girl that was on the train, and she was slashed across the throat, and nobody did anything. And again, it was a man of color, and the victim was a white woman. Lake and Riley. How many white women have to die at the hands of men of color before our society is going to wake up? Right? We're sitting ducks. We keep seeing it. A woman got set on fire in New York City. She died. She was a homeless woman. Guess who set her on fire? It was a black guy. I mean, there was another person. I mean, it just keeps happening, right? Think about it. If it was a black woman and it was a white guy that was setting the person on fire or took out her eye, there would be riots in the streets. And yet, who is voting for who is voting for all of this? It's white women. So at the end of the day, a lot of white women, my own contemporaries, they have only themselves to blame for the chaos and the confusion because they allow their own empathy. That's what it is. It's like their moral superiority disguised as empathy, when in fact, it is just idiocy. That is what is happening. And that's why I kind of understand when I hear, you know, political commentators saying that the worst thing that ever happened in this country was giving the women the right to vote, right? And I know that's controversial to say that. I'm not advocating for that because obviously I am a woman. There's a lot of amazing women doctors and business leaders, but there are not a lot of women that think the way I do, that can separate their emotions. That's our problem. That's a women's problem, right? We allow our emotions to override our common sensibilities. That's why guys tend to make better bosses, because even if they like somebody, even if they feel sorry for somebody, if that person is a poor performer, they cut that person, because that's what you have to do in business. It's not personal, it's professional. And that's how I conduct myself at work. I do. It's not personal. I can really, really, like this girl, real quick, this girl, on Saturday, my show, she was filling in. She did a horrible job. I told her specifically multiple times, don't do this. She did it. All these things. She came up, she apologized. And I said, I understand. Don't worry. You know, I understand. But at the end of the day, I'm going to cut her because I like her and I feel bad. But the sorries aren't going to change that. You keep messing up. And that's what we have to do with people. We have to hold them accountable, and we have to remove our feelings, because that's the right thing to do. So that person can understand that when you make a mistake, saying sorry isn't going to fix it. Just like this Fale Peya guy, he should have been behind bars a long time ago. And the judge that kept releasing him, or the DA that kept releasing him, you have blood on your hands. And I hope they get sued somehow. They need to be held accountable. I'm Lydia Serrani, filling in for Jesse Kelly. I'll be right back again. If you want to follow me on social media, at Lydia News, LIDIANEWS. We'll be right back.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
I like it.
Returns next.
Welcome back to the Jesse Kelly Show. I love me some Pearl Jam, some Eddie Vedder right there. I am still alive. I am still kicking. And we are going to continue telling you the stories that matter, right? Because you're not going to see this story on CNN. You're not going to see it on NBC. You won't see it on your local stations either. You're not going to see it about that woman that I was talking about, right? The Jeanette Markin, who got her eye taken out by a career criminal. You're also not going to hear about the bus driver fired after 30 years on the job, Diane Crawford. She is from the Juniata, J-U-N-I-A-T-A, Juniata County in Pennsylvania. So I'm sorry if somebody from that county is listening and you're saying, I'm just reading this story. So Diane Crawford, over 30 years, she's been working as a bus driver. She heard this kid was on the bus causing problems, and he was speaking Spanish, and he was talking to other kids. So she needed to know what he was saying, because she said, well, if he's saying he's going to attack me, I need to know what he's saying. If he is saying he's going to do X, Y, and Z, I need to know what's going on. I wasn't trying. And she put up a little sign that said, everybody in this bus basically has to speak English. She got fired from her job. Meantime, you have that other woman, right, who's a fifth grade teacher at a Chicago, caught on video mimicking Charlie Kirk being shot in the neck, laughing about it. She's a big, fat, disgusting slob, like her belly hangs over her. I can't, she's just such a vile, like, inside and out. Why? That's another thing. Why do libs, why are they so freaking ugly and fat and pathetic? Like, have you noticed that? Like, you look at the Turning Point USA people and you look at conservatives, you see the White House people now, they're just so put together, beautiful from head to toe. And then you look at these libs, they ooze like zero femininity. They're just disgusting and then you know what it is? That's why they become libs and they hate men, because they don't want to look in the mirror and say, let me go to the gym, or let me diet, let me exercise, let me take pride in my appearance. No, it's just that all men are bad. It's like nobody wants to be with you, lady, because you are a fat pig. So listen to this this bus driver, clip number 17. This is a news report about her, and she talks in it. Listen.
She put up this sign, which read, out of respect to English-only students, there will be no speaking Spanish on this bus.
I didn't mean to be racially insensitive or anything like that.
Crawford claims she never got to explain that the sign was put up to encourage safe and respectful behaviors and was directed at a bilingual student who allegedly had a history of riling up other students.
I didn't know if he was bullying somebody, telling them to do something they shouldn't do. How do you keep control of your bus if you have no control?
The district and Roar Bus writing in a joint statement today that the investigation had finished quickly after Crawford admitted to installing the note, writing, quote, the relevant facts of the situation were fully known and discussed among district and Roar leadership, and that it was, quote, determined that the conduct did not align with the standards and expectations for student transportation providers.
Do you regret making the sign?
Maybe I should have worded it different. Maybe I should have said bullying has no bullying in any language, but I didn't mean it to be anything but to correct him. I dedicated everything I had to driving bus, and it was for the kids. I loved the kids. The kids love me.
Look at that. Isn't that sad? And now she's on welfare. She's on SNAP benefits. She's 60-something, you know, almost 70 years old. She's like, what am I going to do? What, you know, now she's been fired from being a bus driver for that school district. How's she going to get another? This is very sad. This is really sad. What is happening? And then meanwhile, you have these teachers, you have healthcare workers, you know, that Target genie, that grandma, they brought her up on stage on Turning Point. They raised $250,000 for her. Because she was harassed for wearing a Charlie Kirk, that red shirt, she was wearing it. And then this girl tried to get her fired, and she put it on social media, and she's using all this foul language towards this 75-year-old Target grandma genie, and it backfired on her. And that girl is a healthcare worker. So we have healthcare workers, we have teachers. They view the world very myopically, just in through their specific lens. These hateful, despicable, disgusting women. I've said this on TV, and I don't care. I'll say it on the radio. women, these liberal women, are the downfall of society. They are the reason if our republic goes down, it's because of them. It is because of them. Kamala, it's not the Democrats. It's because you people are stupid. You women are stupid because you think you're so morally superior. You think you have a right. Oh, well, Charlie Kirk was a racist. Point to me one time that he said anything racist. I mean, the guy was the opposite of racist. He literally had a black kid come up and say, well, except for just our blood is different. And then Charlie Kirk goes, no, even our blood isn't different. Even microscopically, we're not black people and white people. We're not different. Just our skin tone. He was the opposite of racist. He wanted people to be judged on the content of their character, not the color of their skin. I think if Martin Luther King Jr. were alive today, the left would go after him. I really do think that, because they want violence. That's what they want. And he preached peace. They want violence. They want chaos. They want anarchy. I did a whole big story over the weekend about this trans group, this island turtle group. This is a true story about these four trans Antifa people. This one guy that he wanted to be transferred into a woman's only prison. And then they said no. They wanted to do a Waco style blow up of several businesses in Los Angeles and in Orange County. And then another member, he was in New Orleans. He's a former Marine, former cop. He's also trans. So you have these people that are hopped up on drugs. They're hopped up on hormones. They're not in their right minds. And where is the media covering it? You see that they don't even mention that they're trans, right? They don't even mention this story. You're probably like, wow, I never even saw this story about this bus driver. I didn't hear anything about that poor lady in Seattle that got her eye taken out. Now Lydia's telling me that they were setting up a New Year's Eve style a terrorist attack by like these four trans Antifa people and another one in New Orleans. So this is why the media is fake. This is why, because it's not just what story, it's not just how they tell the story. It's not even just the words. It's the stories that they don't tell you. And that's why they create a narrative. They brainwash you. There's a famous line that says, whoever controls the media controls the masses. And that's why I even have it on my social media. I'm a truth teller. And sometimes the truth sucks. I would love to sit here and say, like my daughter says to me, Mommy, how come we don't have a woman president? And I said, because we had people like, I don't say this to her, she's 8, she's not going to know. It's because instead of propping up somebody that's incredible and amazing and brilliant, they prop up Kamala Harris because she's a DEI candidate. That's why. She's the epitome of DEI, Kamala Harris. Stupid, but she was the right skin tone. And another, oh yeah, by the way, she's married to another white guy, another cuck, what a shocker. And then they put up, you know, Hillary Clinton, you know, just because she's a Clinton. So this is why, because they put up horrible candidates, Julia, my beautiful, lovely daughter. But I do have faith that we're going to have a strong female president one day who's going to do the right thing and not be a DEI loser. I'm Lydia Serrano. When we come back, we're going to talk to a 20-year veteran, NYPD officer. We're going to talk about crime, this revolving door of justice. I'm Lydia Serrano. Lydia News, LIDIANEWS. Don't go anywhere.
Jesse Kelly. Back soon.
Welcome back to the Jesse Kelly Show. The national debt is spiraling out of control. Trade wars are causing record volatility, and tariffs could cause inflation to make a devastating comeback. Are you ready for what more of 2025 could bring? Well, you sit on the sidelines and you wait, or will you take action today to help protect your hard-earned retirement savings? And if you could do it, tax and penalty free, right? What do they say? Two things guaranteed in life: death and paying taxes. So find out more by requesting your free 2025 gold and silver kit from my partners at the top rated precious metals company, Gold Co. Plus, you could get an unlimited bonus silver if you qualify. So all you have to help secure your future today, especially in these volatile times, visit jessielikesgold.com or call 855-817-GOLD, G-O-L-D, to learn more. That's jessielikesgold.com again, or 855-817-GOLD. Welcome back to the Jesse Kelly Show. Again, I'm Lydia Serrano, Lydia News, L-I-D-I-A-N-E-W-S. I was just getting a coffee before And I ran into one of the other DJs here for Z100. And she was like, oh, what's your name? And I said, Lydia. I said, I don't even bother saying my full name because who can say Sarani, right? It's Albanian and in New York. I know probably like somebody in South Carolina. That's where I actually lived there for 5 years for my first TV job. And I remember this guy's like, it wasn't. I used a different name down there because, again, Sarani, C-U-R-A-N-A-J, you know, whatever. And that's my married name. And my real last name is something else, even funkier. And I was had a different last name there. And he's like, what is your ethnicity? Are you Greek? Are you Italian? I said, no, I'm Albanian. He said, but you don't got white hair. He thought I meant albino. So that is, yeah, but I was a crime reporter down there. I covered the craziest crimes. And somebody asked me, they said, what is the one crime story that really sticks out in your mind? And let me bring in my next guest who has dealt with a lot of different crimes in his life. His name is John McCary. He's a former NYPD officer of 18 years, almost 20 years. John McCary also has a fantastic podcast. You don't want to miss it. It's fantastic. He's the founder and host of New York's Finest Unfiltered podcast, The Finest Unfiltered, retired NYPD lieutenant. John McCary, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Lydia, glad to be with you.
So, John, one of my, it sticks in my mind. It was a pit bull had gotten assaulted sexually, and the pit bull's name was Princess, right? And they found out it was a neighbor. It was this boy. This is a true story, folks. This is a true story. And then my news director, I won't say her last name, but her name was Wanda, and Wanda was a bee. And Wanda was really nasty and mean to me. And she, the reason the story was such a big deal is that this guy was molesting, he was molesting dogs and kids and all this stuff. So that's the one story that they started off with the animals. And anyway, she told me to blur the dog's face because she was a rape victim. Can you believe that? That's how. It's that's a true story. I said, you think Princess is going to watch herself on TV? Be like, roof, roof, that's me. Roof. So that is the craziest story. And it's a true story. And so, yeah, she made me blur the dog's face. he ended up. So, yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah. So thank God. He was just trying to, you know, molest kids, but they got him and I hope he's still behind bars. But yeah, so John, I was talking about this story about this woman in Seattle, 75 years old. Her name is Jeanette Markin. And I don't know if you saw the video. You did see it on my social media. You saw that she got whacked in the head by the stick. The guy literally put screws and nails. He created a deadly weapon. He could have killed her. This guy's a career criminal. He took out her eye. He had just recently stabbed somebody 8 times as a cop. How frustrating is it to see those kind of videos and to see these criminals just keep getting released?
Yeah, again, it's you know, it's public safety failures in every Democratic-run city. You see the same playbook over and over again. The mayors of these cities are telling you crime's down, and you're just seeing victim after victim of repeat violent offenders that absolutely nothing happens to in the justice system. You know, the cops knew who the perpetrator was. They were like, oh, he usually just punches people. Like it's okay to go randomly around and punch women and old ladies. And the thing that really bothers me and really gets under my skin is watching the police departments kowtow to their progressive mayors as well, because that's attempted murder. Like, you hit an old woman with a stick with a nail in it. You took her eye out. There is cause that it's right clear as day that you're attempting to cause serious injury to her. There's no way that anyone could think that a 75-year-old woman could survive that, or even a sucker punch from behind. So there's a lot at play, but it's happening in every Democratic-run city throughout America. It's the same public safety failed playbook.
And you see it all the time. Who are the victims? The victims tend to be women. And they're women that are white, right? And you see the perpetrators, they're people of color. So they make up the minority of the population, yet they're committing the majority of the crime. Why can't we say that? Why can't we talk about that? When I was a reporter at Fox 5 right here in New York City, I wasn't allowed to, if the perpetrator was a black person or we weren't allowed to say it. We could say what color the sweater or their jacket or their hat, but we couldn't say what color they were. And I remember my boss, who happens to be a black guy, he was like, "Oh, because then a lot of the times the suspects are black." So that makes people look bad. And I was like, we're just reporting the facts. So we're asking people to look out for somebody, but we won't say their skin tone. And you see that within the police department too, right? And that I feel like that a lot of the stats get skewed, and it's done purposely because of some political, correct nonsense.
Yeah, no, there was a time in even New York City when I was working where they didn't want the dispatchers putting over the description, the skin tone description of perpetrators that we were looking for. You know, thankfully, we went back to actually doing it because we weren't catching anyone, because just saying a male dressed in black doesn't help anybody. You know, we need a little bit more description.
So even dispatch wouldn't say the skin tone because they wanted to be politically correct over dispatch.
Absolutely. It was coming down from the mayor's office. It was coming down from this progressive stance of public safety, and it's anything but public safety. They call it criminal justice reform, but really it's like regression into insanity, because telling the truth is not racist. Telling the truth, there's nothing wrong with it. You know, we police crime. We don't police skin color. If the perpetrators are male white, or the perpetrators are male black, or a female black, whatever they is, we just need to know that if you want crimes to be solved.
Yeah, I don't understand it. And we just keep seeing these career criminals. I told this story with my sister before. We saw this homeless guy acting crazy on the street. We walked down the block and we told the cops, we're like, hey, this guy's acting erratically. And he just shrugged his shoulders. So you have police officers that, even if I think they want to do something, they can't do something. And yet you have the police commissioners and you have the mayors come out and say, crime is down, crime is down. How did they get away with lying to the public?
Because what they're really telling you is that the way we report crime is down. It's not actually that crime is down. So if you take a felony assault, for example, and you're like, maybe it really wasn't a felony, maybe it was a misdemeanor, and you report what should have been a felony as misdemeanor. You know, if you look in all these areas where they're telling you crime's down, all the residents of every city are like, I don't feel safe. I don't take the train at night anymore. I don't go out at night anymore. Yet the police department's telling me crime's down, but I was just a victim, and that's exactly how they're doing it. Is they're misreporting crime. They're going on arbitrary time periods of where they'll show drops in crime, and it's ridiculous, because if you just look at the overall numbers of crime, even with misrepresented data, you could see clear as day that crime is up, violent crime is up, and it's up nationwide. And again, it's all in these Democratic-run cities and Democratic-run states, where they all have this cashless bail, where they're letting violent repeat offenders out. They all pass some form of discovery law, where they put really an undue burden on the district attorney's office, who most of them believe that they're social workers. But even when they go to prosecute, they have these crazy time periods that if they don't get all the evidence in, case gets dismissed. So you have all these people running around the streets that should be in jail.
They certainly should. Don't go anywhere. Again, we're talking to John McCary, former NYPD lieutenant, 18 years. And I just saw like the New York Post posting this story, too, that we're talking about Jeanette Markin. And it's just so horrific. And now it's gaining traction. But don't go anywhere. Again, John McCary. I'm Lydia Serrani at Lydia News, LIDIANEWS. You can see the video of the attack on my social media on Instagram. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Jesse Kelly. Back soon.
And welcome back to the Jesse Kelly Show. I'm Lydia Serrani, filling in for Jesse. He is spending some much needed time off, spending it with his family. It's always great to be able to fill in here. We're talking to John McCary. He is a former NYPD lieutenant, 18 years on the job. He's seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. John, tell everybody how you lost your, you retired, right? You officially retired, but you kind of had to be forced to retire, right?
Yeah, you know, I did 18 years with the police department. I was never a disciplinary problem. I was always 5.0 rated. I was going to move up to be a captain in the NYPD. I was in my 18th year when Bill de Blasio implemented the COVID mandate. right before Eric Adams took office. Eric Adams took office. I submitted a religious accommodation. I submitted a medical accommodation.
To not get the shot.
I had COVID-19 in the line of duty. I got pneumonia from it. I had a really bad go of it. And when I got back to work, I went to see the NYPD doctors. And they told me not to take the COVID vaccine. They said that more than likely I would have an adverse side effect due to the fact I had it so badly. And so I went, I adhered to their advice. I went, I took an antibody exam, and my antibodies were absolutely through the roof. And so when I told the doctors that, when only days later they're telling me, listen, we're going to fire you if you don't take this, I was like, you know, I wasn't willing to take the termination and give away 18 years, my health benefits. So, you know, I consider that I was coercively terminated, but I did retire. I was like, I retired earlier, retired much earlier than I wanted, but 2 years shy of a full pension, you know. And it was a terrible time. And it wasn't just me. It was thousands of officers and city workers across New York City dealt with that, as well as private sector workers. And it was just a ridiculous, unscientific time in New York City history, and something that I hope we never see again.
Oh, my God. And I mean, and now we know definitively all the adverse side effects as people, strokes, heart attacks. I have a family member who all of a sudden is now in congestive heart failure after getting the shot. My father, who died a year ago, he said he was never the same after he got the shot. And I have so much guilt in my heart. I'm like heartbroken. I mean, he didn't have an outward side effect that, like I told you about, the other family member who literally within a month, she ended up having she was having heart problems and had they diagnosed her with congestive heart failure. And of course they say it had nothing to do with the shot, but my father, he said he died on September 29th of last year. He said he was never the same. He never felt the same after that shot. And me, which I'm a very healthy kind of person. I work out almost every single day. I was knocked on my butt. I have never, after I got the second shot, and I was forced to by my previous employer. He told me if I don't get the shot, I would lose my job. And I needed my job. I have a mortgage. And my husband and I were not independently wealthy. And I was literally bedridden. I couldn't get out of bed. I didn't know what happened to me. My husband, thankfully, never had to get the shot. And he never got COVID. Me, who got the shot, I ended up getting COVID like 3 times. And by the way, that same boss that forced me to get it, he lost his vision in one of his eyes after he got the shot. I'm not kidding. And you know which boss I'm going to talk. I'm telling you, right, John? I'm not going to say his name on the air. But like, this is what people were going through because of these mandates and these same people that say you should be allowed to kill your kid up until the 9th month. Because here in New York, you're allowed to kill your baby up until the 9th month. And they say it's my body, my choice. Meantime, they forced us to take this experimental thing.
Absolutely. And now, you know, and they really went after all faith-based people, everyone that believes in the truth. And it really was a terrible time. And it really went against science. I mean, because think about that. I have the same doctor that was telling me 7 days prior, listen, don't take this. This could be bad for you because you're already protected with your natural immunity. And he explained it to me like, well, you know, you've had chickenpox when you were a kid, right? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, exactly. You didn't take a chickenpox vaccine because now you have immunity to it. 7 days later, he's like, well, you got to take it because the mayor said so. We're going to fire you. And I'm like, is this a joke? You know, and you know, I just couldn't do it. Like, I wanted to do it. I wanted to continue on in my career. I wanted to move up to captain. You know, I love New York City. I love the New York City Police Department. But I just didn't feel comfortable with it. And I felt that, like, it was wrong to what they were doing to our kids at the same time. My kids were being segregated in school. And I just couldn't go along with it. And so that ultimately, like, kind of forced me out of my career and then into, like, what I'm doing now, where I've been speaking out and kind of, you know, being the voice of the rank and file cops in the New York City Police Department.
Again, we're speaking to John McCary. He is the host of the Finest Unfiltered podcast. We got about a minute left. What do you think's going to happen to New York City now that we have a Mayor Mamdani?
I think you're going to continue to see it on a downward spiral. You're looking at, and as far as public safety concerned, crime's going to continue to rise. You're going to continue to hear the perception management campaign come out that crime is down from the NYPD and from elected officials. But they're going to continuously push out, you know, good, moral, active police officers, and they're going to replace them with underpaid, cops without guns and this new Bureau of Community Safety that he's implementing. So I think you're just going to see more of this failed progressive criminal justice reform agenda in New York City, unfortunately. I don't think you're going to see things get better for a while.
No, we won't. John McCary, thank you so much for joining us. And again, host of the Unfiltered podcast. Where can they listen to you and watch you?
Absolutely. If you guys can just go over to YouTube at The Finest Unfiltered, we're nearing 70,000. We're trying to get past that 100,000 subscriber mark. So appreciate it, Lita. It's always great talking to you.
Oh, thank you. All right, guys, we got a lot more to talk about because I am going to be talking to Father Pavone. He was kicked out of the priesthood. We're going to talk to him about it. So we're talking to one person that was forced out of the NYPD, but that's what we do. And the reason he was kicked out, Father Pavone, is for telling the truth. We love the truth here on the Jesse Kelly Show. I'm Lydia Serrani at Lydia News, LIDIANEWS. We'll be right back.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.